diet affects us in a number of physiologic ways with a reflexive effect on how we function. And I'd like to take a number of different types of disorders that we suffer from and assist you to understand how the diet affects those particular things and makes us so that we feel good or bad in the mind, depending on how we feel good or bad in the body. And the first thing I'd like to talk about is that of menopause. Menopause is a prototype of disorders that can afflict us based on the hormones that we have. When the menopause occurs, there is, instead of the up and down cycles that we have been accustomed to, there is a flattening out at a lower level so that the height of that level is not achieved, nor is the lowest point achieved by the woman who is menopausal, but just a little above the low point that women have when they're having cyclic alterations in the blood plasma of their female hormones. Now, I'd like to point out that in our book, Nutrition for Vegetarians, on page 101, we have a section on the menopause. There are several features of menopause that have a connection with diet, and it is a fact that vegetarian women have a distinct advantage in handling menopause successfully. Menopause can occur as early as 35 years or as late as about age 60, but generally the average age is around 50. 48 to 52 will include about 75% of women. Menopause cannot be said to have occurred until there has been no menstruation for at least a year, since a woman at almost any time can have a year of what we call amenorrhea. That means without menstruation, she can have that just as an ordinary part of the menstrual program. And any woman who is age 20 and onward, or even younger, who has established regular menstrual periods can go back to can just leave off her menstrual cycles for a whole year or even 2 years and then go back, pick up again without skipping anymore after that. Often if a woman is 35 or 37, she will think, if she has such a period of amenorrhea, that perhaps she has gone through the menopause, and then be very surprised when her periods start back up again exactly as they had been before. Now, there are several things that characterize the menopausal condition. These involve skin and hair and mucous membranes, all the mucous membranes, those inside the mouth, inside the nose, inside the vagina, even the surfaces inside the gastrointestinal tract. All of these are affected to some degree by the fact that the female sex hormones, the estrogen types, have fallen off in the bloodstream. There is often a sensation of dryness and itching in the genital area and other symptoms. And during the early years of menopause, 80% of women will have hot flashes followed by a little sense of chilliness. Now, for some women, these hot flashes are simply disabling. They are of such a nature that the woman is drenched with a sweat during the hot period. And then during the chilly period, she is shivering. So it can be incapacitating. Very fortunately, the hot flashes don't last long. That is that severe. And most women who experience hot flashes find them to be sort of interesting or even a little humorous, and don't have any problem with them at all. And I think if a woman would simply take that attitude, that it would go far toward helping her to bear this thing that is not usually disabling. It is usually simply annoying rather than incapacitating. And I would say that the great majority of women require no treatment whatsoever, and they just sail through the menopause. And of course, 20% of women never know anything other than that they're having their cycles regularly every 28 days, and suddenly they are not there. That's all there is to it. They never know any other thing than that one thing. Now, in those who do have symptoms, usually they will pass within a few months or a few years, 2 or 3 years, and usually a woman has passed through those. If a woman has surgery, she will usually pass through the menopause in which her ovaries are taken out, and sometimes if even the uterus alone is taken out, a woman will have menopausal symptoms because of the alteration in the blood flow to the ovaries. And women should bear this in mind. They often feel that if they get a hysterectomy only without involvement of the ovaries, that the ovaries will be completely functional right on up until their time of menopause, and then they will go through the menopause. And then they're quite disturbed when they discover that they go through the menopause at the time that they have the uterus removed. They have hot flashes and then start having dryness if this is going to be a part of the syndrome that they experience. So it should be explained to a woman that we cannot avoid altering the blood supply to the ovaries when we take out the uterus. And there will be a diminution in the blood supply to the ovaries after a hysterectomy. And this will help many women to decide that whatever minor symptoms they are having that make them seek the services of a physician for which he offers them a hysterectomy, that they would be just happier to bear with those minor symptoms. And in my experience in pathology, I believe that 90% of the uteri that I have seen that have come through my department of pathology, I would consider it to be unnecessary surgery, even though there was some little thing wrong with the uterus. But that is physiologic. It is physiologic to have a little cervicitis. I believe that one of the cemeteries, one of the graveyards for white blood cells, represents the female genital tract and parts of the gastrointestinal tract and parts of the breasts, as well as the tonsils and the appendix and other places where we have cemeteries. The spleen is also a graveyard for white blood cells and red blood cells. That's where they go when they are senile. It's sort of the nursing home, and they stay there until they pass away. And then they are liquefied and their products reabsorbed into the bloodstream, or else they are secreted in the secretions of those particular organs. So to find a few of those in a uterus does not mean that the uterus had to come out. It may have been much better just left in place, because now the body does not have that good cemetery at its disposal. Well, that part of that is speculative. But you can certainly see the kind of reasoning that we should have. Even though an organ may not be being used for its primary function, it may have several secondary functions that make it helpful to the body to have that particular organ. Now let's go back to the thing of the sensation of dryness. A sensation of dryness in the genital area can often be abolished if a woman will simply do a little, what is called a perineal pour. It is often used for the postpartum period, where a woman is told about hygiene in the postpartum state, of simply using a cup full of, often it is some kind of solution, but it has been clearly shown that plain water does just as well, and cold water or hot water I find to be better than just lukewarm or faintly warm water. So a cup of cold water poured across the genital area and blotted is a mini treatment to the area and will often abolish the symptoms of dryness and itching after only a very short time, 3 or 4 days often. Now the hot flashes can be treated very nicely by simply taking a cool to slightly cold shower. It does not have to be unpleasant nor shocking, but if this will be taken every morning, it too will act as a treatment for a woman and will often abolish the hot flashes in just almost no time flat. The book Home Remedies on page 119 has a very nice section on cool showers for hot flashes. Now, let me give you another treatment, and I hope everybody will remember this because there isn't anybody in this room who isn't going to contact hot flashes at some time, whether you are young or old or whatever your gender may be. This is such a common disorder that you will encounter it at some time if you're in the health field. You should know what a good remedy is for the hot flashes. And I am certain that if you sat around and thought all day, you probably would not think of it. And yet it is so simple. It is simply deep breathing. All that the woman needs to do is to take through her nose a deep breath and then through her mouth exhale it. And that will assist her to lose heat. And nobody knows why a woman has hot flashes. We just know that it occurs because of the hormonal changes, but exactly what it is, nobody knows. I have a theory, and it is that we do know that at that time in life, a woman has an alteration in the way that she breathes. Women generally do not snore until they reach the menopause. Then, at the time of menopause, women begin to snore with about the same regularity that men do. But men have started snoring at about age 18. Women start snoring at about age 48 or 50. I think that one of the contributing causes, if not the principal cause, of hot flashes is an alteration in the regularity with which she breathes. And if she is not an outdoor person, her respirations may be so depressed at times, also on a cyclic fashion, so that maybe for 5 minutes she is breathing very shallowly and very slowly, and then she begins to breathe normally again, does that for 10 or 15 minutes or even several hours, and then goes through another period of breathing shallowly and slowly. And during that time, she develops the hot flash, followed then by a body reaction to cool the body, and then she has the cold chill. So if a woman is plagued with hot flashes, just tell her to breathe deeply. And then out through the mouth. Now, why out through the mouth? Because that gets rid of more heat. If it goes back up through the nasal passages, that tends to conserve heat. The body is very conservative with heat, normally speaking. So you want to get rid of as much heat as possible. So the way to do that, breathe in through the nose, out through the mouth. Remember that when you're trying to conserve heat, and go and breathe in and out through the nose. Now, there are some misconceptions around the menopausal syndrome. One is that obesity comes on because of menopause, and that isn't true. Obesity comes on because of a relaxation and overeating and under-exercising. Now, under-exercising also comes on at about the same time. And because of her lessened caloric expenditure, she begins to gather a little bit of weight. Some say that graying and thinning of the hair comes on about that time. Then what makes graying and thinning of the hair in men if it's due to menopause? Some say that wrinkled skin and cracked fingernails, varicose veins and flabby breast tissue, loss of muscle tone, tooth decay, hairiness, arthritis, high blood pressure, heart disease, and insomnia, that all of these are menopause related, but they are not. They're just all a part of getting older. And even if a woman has gone through a surgical menopause at age 20, she will start having these other things at about age 50. That's just a part of the aging process. So we should not blame everything on menopause. Now, what about insanity and neuroses and depressions and the empty nest syndrome and all of that? Is that menopausal? No, those are not menopausal either. They just happen to come on at the same time. It is at about that time that a woman's children leave home. It has nothing to do with the menopause. If she had had a surgical menopause in her 20s, she would still have gone through the empty nest syndrome at about 50 when her children leave home. And all of a sudden, she looks around and thinks, I am getting older and I don't endure things quite as much as I used to, heavy labor and the like. Maybe I've lost my usefulness. And she begins to develop the empty nest syndrome. There is a very good cure for that, and that is to do works of charity. The Bible says that good looks in a woman have to do with her good works, not with the appearance of the exterior of a woman. That is what true beauty is in a woman, is it not? That is good works. It is not physical excellence necessarily. Neatness, cleanliness, and orderliness about a woman are essential. But great physical beauty is not essential for heaven to classify a woman as being beautiful. If she is a woman of good works, then heaven calls her lovely. If she has a meek and quiet spirit, heaven calls her lovely. Now, for all of these things that I have mentioned, there are some remedies, except perhaps for thinning of the hair. We don't know anything for that. Neither for men nor for women. We have to count on heredity to determine whether or not our hair is going to become thin. But there are some things that one can do to assist one in changing the hormonal status of the bloodstream. And this has to do with diet. And that's why I'd like to talk with you about it now. On page 49 of our book, Nutrition for Vegetarians, you will find a list of foods which are high in plant sterols. Now, if you have done much in the way of studying food chemistry, you will recognize that the plant sterols are such sterols or such substances, food substances as phytosterol, cytosterol, ergosterol, and the like. These plant sterols are very similar to estrogens. And if you study this chapter that we have on fats in Nutrition for Vegetarians, you can see that ergosterol, cholesterol, vitamin D, and estrogens, as well as cortisone, testosterone, and progesterone all have the same base molecule with different side chains to make the different kinds of the hormones that we would be working with. A number of years ago, Dr. Calvin and I wanted to find out if we could alter the level of hormones in a woman's bloodstream by altering her diet. We needed a woman who was postmenopausal, who had not had her uterus removed surgically, and who had had no spotting between the time of her menopause and the present time. This so that we could have a good indicator. Some of you will recognize that when we withdraw hormones from a woman who has been taking, say, estrogens, we take those away from her. If she has a uterus, if we do that suddenly, she will have a little mini menstrual period or maybe a good bit of bleeding right at that time. This we call withdrawal bleeding. It is that causes the menstrual period. When the hormones go high, there is a buildup of the lining tissue of the interior of the womb. This is making ready for the fertilized ovum. Then when these hormones fall off in her bloodstream, she has her menstrual period. Well, we wondered if we could, by simply withdrawing all of those foods that are high in plant sterols, we wondered if we could cause a sufficient fall off in her hormones to give a postmenopausal woman a menstrual period. So it wasn't long after we got our list. We sent our librarian down to the library to get us a list of these foods that are high in plant sterols. When she came back with a list, a couple of weeks later, we had the ideal patient, one such as I described. We asked her if she would cooperate with us, and she was happy to do so. We removed all these foods from her diet, and I will just read these that we had in our original list. These are listed in the second column of page 49. apples, cherries, olives, plums, carrots, yams, that would be sweet potatoes, beans and peanuts and soy products of all kinds, eggplant, tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, all the whole grain cereals except for buckwheat and white rice, white flour products and the like. So we gave our patient all of the white flour products and white rice and all foods other than those listed. Coconut, food yeast, and wheat germ are also high in plant sterols. Now, this was for a test. This was not for a treatment. This was just to see if we could alter her hormonal status. So we took all these foods away. Sure enough, 3 days later, she had a tiny little menstrual period, the first spotting of blood that she had had in 5 years since she'd gone through the menopause. We knew that we had altered her hormone status. So this let us know we could alter the hormone status of a woman by diet. So from then till now, that was about 12 or 13 years ago, we have not had to use hormones in any case of the menopausal syndrome that we have treated. And we have felt very happy for that, because I'm sure that all of you know that there is an increased risk of a number of cancers and a number of other problems, even osteoporosis. And that's a paradox. Estrogens will cause thickening of the bone or a density of the bones for a short time, but then after a while begin to cause a thinning of the bone. So it works as a paradox for a woman. And in our book, Nutrition for Vegetarians, we have a section on osteoporosis. And you will find that birth control pills do cause osteoporosis, but estrogens will also if they're taken for a long period of time. Let me just read some of the things that cause osteoporosis, and I would like to help you to get a little bit of a handle on what we face in the treatment of osteoporosis. Why should we all of a sudden in this 20th century start seeing women who are having a great deal of problem with osteoporosis? Well, let's just look at some of the things that cause osteoporosis. There have been sporadic cases all through history, I suppose, but it's only in modern times that we have seen an epidemic of osteoporosis. Why? Well, it's very simple. Here are the things that cause osteoporosis: alcohol, steroids, even those that are rubbed on the skin for a sunburn or for a little bit of swelling or for a rash, those that are used intravaginally for this same drying and itching that we've been talking about, an increase in uric acid. How does a person get an increase in uric acid? By eating things that are high in purines. Now, if you don't know what the purines are, don't worry about learning them, although we have a list of the purines in the high purine foods in several of our books, in Nutrition for Vegetarians and in Natural Remedies. But if you don't happen to have anything that has a list of high purine foods, if you just know generally those foods that are high in proteins, proteins and purines go together in foods. So if you have a general understanding of foods that are high in proteins, then stay away from those. Or if you eat them at all, eat them in small quantities. Again, the total vegetarian has a great advantage here, doesn't he? And we can see right away that one of the things causing us to have osteoporosis as an epidemic in America is our high-protein diet. Now, of those foods that you know, what are the foods that are the highest in protein? Let's name them. Meat, milk, eggs, and cheese. Well, if you eliminate those, then you'll be a vegetarian, won't you? So one of the treatments of osteoporosis is a vegetarian diet. This is recognized by everyone. Now, what is another big thing that causes bones to get firm besides diet? Exercise. So here is the second big thing that you will want to treat osteoporosis with. And by the way, in no other place is there any better room for prevention than in the disease osteoporosis. It is much easier to prevent than it is to cure. So teach people that the vegetarian diet and exercise are the two things that will help them to avoid osteoporosis. But let us go on. Let us learn some other things. One thing that causes a high loss of bone mineral is that of high blood fats. So if we have hyperlipidemia or high blood fats, this will encourage osteoporosis. How does one get high blood fats? Let's name some foods. Meat, milk, eggs, and cheese. Well, if you eliminate those, you will be a vegetarian, won't you? So do you see how a lot of these things point to being vegetarian? This is why, as a physician, I promote for everybody that they be vegetarians. Some say, well, Dr. Thrash, you're a Seventh-day Adventist, and Seventh-day Adventists believe in a vegetarian diet. Yes, we do. But it isn't because we have any religious reasons for it. It is for health reasons that we are vegetarians. We believe it is our religious duty to be healthy. Now, if we can understand that, that will eliminate a lot of hypothetical questions that people sometimes ask me. What would you do if you were starving and the only thing you had to eat was rats or swine or something like that? And, well, you see, the objective is to be healthy, the healthiest that I can be, and not to consult appetite, but to consult God as to what I will eat. And if I eliminate appetite as the driving force behind what I am going to select as what I will eat, then I will say, well, whatever is available, I will eat the most healthful thing. Then I don't have to consider such hypothetical questions as, what would you do if you were on a desert island and there was nothing to eat but snakes? I believe that. I believe that God would not bring me to such a thing that would make me have to violate something that He has commanded. Now, another thing that causes us to have osteoporosis is smoking. Smoking is, without a doubt, that worst of all things in America's health that undermines the health of Americans. But what about coffee? Coffee is almost as bad a thing in our American dietary as is smoking a bad habit. Coffee, if you take only one just innocent cup per day, you are losing 1.4% of your bone mineral per year if you're past the age of 50. What percentage was that again? 1.4 per year. How much would that be in a decade? So if she takes one cup of coffee per day from the ages of 50 to 60, she will have lost 14% of her bone mineral by the age of 60. Well, if whatever she has left, if she continues that one cup of coffee a day until she's 70, she will have lost 14% more. That's 28% of her bone mineral. So you can easily see why American women are having a big problem. Well, now what about milk? Is milk a great panacea for osteoporosis? It is certainly being advertised on TV. In fact, I have right here, this comes to me from Myers Community Council. This is from number 11, Penn Plaza, New York City. This is talking about calcium currents. This is National Dairy Promotion and Research Board. Very nice little article. This comes out to every physician, every preventive medicine person, every health food store, every vegetarian restaurant in the country will get this little thing if they can possibly get their address. And here we see on the back page, the National Dairy Board will present a nationwide telecast entitled Calcium, News and Views on Bone Health. That appeared Friday, April the 26th, 1985, from 2 to 4 p.m. 2 hours on bone health. Do you suppose they emphasized exercise in that program? I doubt it. What do you suppose they emphasized? Well, now, what is milk the only good place for us to get calcium? If you have the book, Nutrition for Vegetarians, would you turn, please, to page 73? And we have a very small table there of calcium in common foods. We don't have all the common foods that are high in calcium, but we do have enough so that you can see a comparison. Let's take cow's milk. Whole, fresh cow's milk, 1 cup. How much does this table say that it contains? 288 milligrams, all right? 288 milligrams in 1 cup. Keep that in your mind because that is our comparison block. How much does 1 cup of breast milk, human breast milk, contain? That's just up above cow's milk. 80 milligrams. 80 as compared to 288. Very clearly, a human does not need so much calcium as a cow does in the food. Now, what about collards? 1 cup of collards. How much does that have? 304. Well, that's more than a cup of milk, isn't it? How many of you have ever heard that collards have more calcium than a cup of milk? Well, nobody. Unless you've heard some of us talking about it. What about broccoli? Well, the latest thing on broccoli, this just came out, this came from Women's Health and Nutrition Letter International, edited by Dr. Carolyn Davanzo. This is broccoli. And this 1 cup of cooked broccoli has 392. Well, that's the old one there. You need to update that one. You need to write in your manual 392. This is the latest here on the analysis. Well, why is it that the National Dairy Promotion and Research Board, who is so interested in bone health for us, why do they not say, folks, be sure to get plenty of broccoli every day? Or get some. And why did you never hear that broccoli has more than 100 milligrams more of calcium, has a third more calcium in it that per cup than has milk? Well, that's probably because there is no National Broccoli Board. If there were, I'm sure you would probably have heard about it. But you see, it is just not so lucrative business to talk about broccoli as being high in calcium as it is milk being high in calcium. But I think that we should promote this, and this would be a great help to us. Now, let me ask you this question. What country of the world has more osteoporosis than any other country in the world? United States. Well, what country of the world drinks more milk than any other country of the world? Well, do you not consider that to be a great paradox of some kind? If it is, as the American Dairy Association says, and that is that milk is essential if you're going to have strong bones. Because here we take more milk than any other country in the world, and yet we have more osteoporosis than any other country in the world. And I would like to say to you this morning that milk is a poor source of calcium because of its high phosphorus content, its high protein content. This makes it a poor source of calcium, because the kidneys must simply get rid of calcium because of all of this protein that we have. So it must get rid of the, because it must maintain a certain osmolality in the blood, and it cannot do so if it continues to keep so much calcium. So I thought you would like to see just how osteoporosis fits into all of this thing having to do with calcium. Do not be misled. you can have a perfectly healthful diet with a vegetarian diet. You will notice on the table that you have here on page 73 of Nutrition for Vegetarians that 2 tablespoons full of sesame seed have as much calcium as a whole cup of milk. So we, Dr. Matheny.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Dr. Matheny says that he had a severe case of osteoporosis which has been turned around. And how did you do that? By the vegetarian diet. And exercise. And yes. Neville says also that he had osteoporosis and that has turned around by vegetarian diet. Yes, all right. That's another point that I would like to point out, and that is that usually you will hear it said that it is progressive and cannot be cured, but if you will take steps at the right time, you certainly can help your bones to be much less a problem. Now, I would like for us to take a second disorder, and that is thyroid disorder. If you have Nutrition for Vegetarians, turn to page 100, and you will see a section on thyroid. Now, the thyroid influences every cell in the body. It also influences every thought that we have. Our thought processes cannot be just right if we do not have a properly functioning thyroid. If it is overly active, we may think in a not proper way. If it is underactive, we may think in an improper way. I remember a patient that we had one time who had an overactive thyroid. It had been known for some time that she was high-strung, nervous, didn't sleep so well, but it wasn't until she started having psychotic behavior that she was brought to the physician. And the psychotic behavior that she had was that she became very glad-handed. Anyone who came by, she was quite willing to give any of her goods or money or supplies to. She would buy groceries and then find somebody on the street and just give them away to them. Every time she came to see my husband, she was our patient several years ago. And at that time, she was the proprietress of an antique store. She had some very lovely antiques. Every time she came to my husband's office, she would bring to him some kind of little antique statuary or baskets or plaques or paintings or something worth thousands of dollars. So she would bring these in and give those to him as a gift. And he would thank her very warmly. And then he would have his secretary to put those in a safe place. So he kept all of these, several thousands of dollars worth of gifts. And when we had her disease under control, he gave all of those things back to her. Not so with many people who were unscrupulous with her during her disease. She lost tens of thousands of dollars during that time. This because of an overactive thyroid. Now there is another kind, the opposite end gives you another kind of mental problem, and that is a sort of slowing down. The judgment may get to be very poor, one's perception may be very poor, and one thing that becomes obvious is slow talking. So slow, and they often fix you with a stare, a slow stare. It's uncomfortable. But it may come on so slowly that it's imperceptible. So those who are with her all the time, just and it usually is a woman, begin to think that perhaps she is just getting old or she is certainly getting negligent about her personal hygiene and about her the way she talks and a number of other things. And they sort of pass it off as this is the way Mama is. She is certainly deteriorating. She certainly didn't used to be this way. But those who see her only periodically, like every once a year at a family reunion, they come in, oh, what has happened to Mother? She has deteriorated dreadfully in the last year or two. And at that point, she goes to the doctor, and it is discovered that she has low thyroid. The skin also often becomes sallow, and the hair gets a little reddish tinge to it. This is hypothyroidism. Now, when we first started treating with simple remedies, we were very intimidated by the thyroid diseases. We had never been taught how to deal with thyroid diseases in any other way except with medicines or surgery. And here was a disease that we were faced with, not knowing how to treat it in any other way. So we began to just experiment. And one of the things that we decided to experiment with was that of diet. So we, again, sent our research librarian down to the library to get a list of foods high in thiourea. Thiourea is one of the drugs that we were taught to treat hyperthyroidism with. And you will see a list of these on page 100, a partial list. We have a longer list now as more and more tests are being done. This treats hyper, yes. Cabbage, carrots, kale, peaches, peanuts with the skins on, pears, rapeseed, rutabaga, soybeans, spinach, strawberries, turnips. These are all known to be high in thiourea.
I was told that scumminoids are only high when they're raw, like the peanuts and the cabbage.
Okay. Statement is that these are high only when they're raw, but that is not true. Even when they're cooked, you can have a high thiourea content in these. Now, two things. One, if you're hyperthyroid, what would be your attitude toward these foods? Eat them. If you're low in thyroid or hypothyroid, then what would be your attitude toward these foods? Leave them off. That's right. Now, there are some other things to do. You should alternate hot and cold compresses to the thyroid area. You should prolong cold to the thyroid area. And for sedation, you can give a neutral bath, tell the person to get plenty of outdoor exercise. That all for hyperthyroidism. Then for low thyroid, page 101, use one serving of oats and bananas daily. I rather like that part of the diet, don't you? Then it says, use no free fats, sugars, or salts until the thyroid problem is under control. Blood fats tend to be abnormally elevated. Fluids tend to accumulate, especially if salt is used. So these substances should be eliminated from the diet when you're treating hypothyroidism. Now, the person who has hypothyroidism or the low thyroid should have a 50-second cold shower to the adrenal area every morning and night, followed by a tapotnet. Now, if you encourage the adrenals to be active, the adrenals will also encourage the thyroid to be active. We had a young lady one time, age 19, who came to us with a low thyroid level. She was having fatigue and sleepiness. We checked her thyroid, and sure enough, it was 2.5 on a scale where 4.5 and 11 and 12.5 represent the normal range. At 2.5, she was quite hypothyroid. So we started in with her with all of these things listed on pages 100 and 101. And within a month, her T4 was already up to 4. And within 2 months, it was about 6. And in 3 months, it was about 7. And it has been that for the last about 8 years. And she is just doing fine. She went through all of these things every night for about 3 months, gave herself a treatment just before going to bed. She would put a wet compress on her throat, then a plastic on that, and then would put a heating pad, a thin one just made for the neck, would put the heating pad there on the neck and keep it there for 30 minutes. Then remove the heating pad and put a thick scarf around the throat and sleep with that. She did that every night for about 3 months. She did the cold shower every morning, slept in cool air, did not use an electric blanket. All of those tend to suppress the activity of the thyroid, that is warm air and an electric blanket. This very effectively did away with the problem that she had of hypothyroidism. When I was discussing for you osteoporosis, I forgot to mention a couple of things that I would like to mention for you, and that is that thyroid supplement can cause osteoporosis. And do you suppose that the widespread use of thyroid hormone just as a tonic, if a woman comes in feeling a little tired, she may walk away from the doctor's office with a prescription for a thyroid medication? This is an improper use of thyroid medication. Thyroid medication should not be used as a tonic. It should only be restricted to those cases of low thyroid in which it is impossible to bring the thyroid function up using natural means. To take thyroid supplement does increase the risk that a woman has of getting cancer of the breast. And I think it is no happenstance that we are having an epidemic of cancer of the breast in this country. It is a very serious and very common disease of women. And I think that a part of our lifestyle, American lifestyle, is what promotes so much breast cancer. A subtotal thyroid gastrectomy will increase one's risk of osteoporosis. And if you take vitamins A and D, that increases your risk too. Where should you get your vitamin D, especially if you're a total vegetarian? How much sunshine do you need? If you're fair-skinned, a 6-inch patch of skin exposed to the sun for 10 minutes is quite adequate for a good store of vitamin D. If you're dark-skinned, you need approximately twice that, 20 minutes. 6-inch patch, how much is that? That's the size of the face. So we do not need a sun bath in order to get plenty of vitamin D. Just get out in the sun. And whether or not you are clothed or whether you are taking a sun bath, you will get plenty of vitamin D for quite a long storage. Vitamin D is stored very nicely. The people who run into trouble are those who live, who have indoor lives, who work at night and sleep in the daytime and never get out in the sunshine. All right, another thing, if you use a lot of salt in your diet, that too will encourage osteoporosis. If you take a high phosphorus diet, that encourages osteoporosis. And where do we get a high phosphorus diet? Milk is one of the commonest sources. Meat is also. But then we can get it from wheat bran. So do not ad lib on wheat bran. You need to be a little restrained in your use of wheat bran. Yes. Yes, I went back to osteoporosis.
Mm-hmm. How about bananas?
Bananas? No, they are high in potassium, but they don't have enough phosphorus to ruin our balance with calcium.
The wheat bran
No, not wheat germ, but wheat bran. The bran is high in phosphorus. Cattle are often fed wheat bran because it is very cheap. And the farmer will often notice that his cattle have what is called bran disease. That just means that their legs are painful. And so they stand around shaking a leg, and they stand on one leg, and then they lift another leg, and they shake it a little bit, and their legs become painful. And if the farmer squeezes them, the cow is in pain. This because of so much phosphorus in the bran. So cattle should not be fed that much. Now, another thing causing osteoporosis is antacids which contain aluminum. As we have already mentioned in this class, many people consider antacids to be a form of food that can be just taken ad lib. We should emphasize the fact that antacids are not foods. They are medicines. They are pharmacologic agents. You should know that high zinc foods combat osteoporosis. And on page 77 of our book, Nutrition for Vegetarians, you will see a list of foods high in zinc. Beans are high, lima beans. Breads are high, chickpeas, page 77. Chickpeas are high. Field corn is high, but not the sweet yellow corn. Cowpeas, these are black-eyed peas, they are high. Granola is high. Lentils are high. Oatmeal, peanuts, peanut butter, peas, and popcorn. Popcorn is very high. It is almost as high as beef. Beef, of course, is high in zinc, but we do not have to depend on beef, which has many other problems with it, to get our zinc. We can get it just from a vegetarian source. One more question. Yes, the aluminum is what causes the problem. Yes. Cookware and underarm deodorants and flavoring agents containing aluminum, these could all increase the aluminum content of the blood. And baking powder, of course, baking powder is very high in aluminum, and the blood aluminum rises high from baking powder. The Seventh-day Adventists don't use baking powder and haven't for over 100 years. Am I correct on that? That is what we have taught, though, isn't it? We have taught not to use baking powder for over 100 years. So let us recognize that there were very good reasons why that good counsel was given to us. Take a break for a few minutes, and then we'll come back.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.